So maybe let's get started with our seminar on enterprise-wide optimization. And today we have truly a great pleasure of having both Professor Robert Fals and Nicolas Grenzes from Lancaster University, the Management School. And it's on the topic of forecasting, which every time we have our meetings on enterprise-wide optimization is a topic that comes up on how to best deal with it. So let me just say a few words about our presenters. So Professor Robert Fals, he's a distinguished professor in the Management School, again at Lancaster University. In terms of his education, he has a bachelor's degree from Oxford University and PhD from University of California, Davis. His main area of research is supply chain forecasting. He's dealt also with methods for comparing, you know, different techniques for forecasting, and then also especially, for example, support tools for production and inventory, including fast-moving products. He has had a distinguished career at Lancaster, has been the department head of management science and also the dean of the business school, and he's currently the joint director of the Center for Marketing Analytics and Forecasting. He's been the author of many papers. In fact, his work has been highly cited, has close to 7,000 Google Scholar citations, and one of the things that is also very important about him, he's been the recipient of the Beale Award. Beale, in case you don't know, Martin Beale was actually somebody at British Petroleum who was very prominent in the area and pioneer of mixed integer linear programming, one of the first computer codes. So Professor Fals received that award in 2016 by the Operational Research Society in the UK. So again, very pleased to have Professor Fals. And again, this will be we have a joint presentation with Professor Nicolas Grenzes. He has a degree, a master's in operations research, again, management science from Lancaster, and his PhD, also management science, and he was co-supervised by Professor Crone and Professor Kiles. In fact, when he did his PhD, he did receive the Kingston Prize in 2009 for the best PhD thesis. And in terms of his work, it's also along the lines of forecasting, but maybe with emphasis on economic model building and also some computational intelligence methods. And again, you know, he's been very active in the area. He's also a member of the Center for Marketing Analytics and Forecasting. So both, again, Professor Fals and Professor Grenzes will give us a, you know, overview on the best out of forecasting software. I should mention that actually, and I'm sure they will make reference to that, they wrote a very nice article in ORMS, sort of a survey about the various tools that are available for forecasting. And I think to a large extent what they'll be doing today is to sort of give us an overview of the area, what's available, and what are some of the major considerations. Okay, so then again, I'll turn it over to Professor Robert Fals and to Professor Grenzes. Okay, welcome, and thank you very much for giving us a talk. So if you want to go ahead, please.
Thank you for that kind introduction. We're very flattered to be joining you transatlantically to discuss forecasting software. It's a topic close to our hearts, and we're going to argue how important it is. You perhaps don't need to be totally convinced, but there are some important aspects which we'll discuss with you. And but first, let me introduce the center to you. The center, let's start at a slightly different place. Lancaster University. It's not in Pennsylvania and it's not in California. It is actually one of the founding universities in subjects like operational research, and in particular in forecasting, where a name which some of you will be familiar with, Gwilym Jenkins, was one of the first professors, Jenkins of Box and Jenkins, and forecasting has been an important part of the activities in Lancaster. I joined in 1990 and formally set up this center, which has developed very substantially. And you've got in front of you some pretty pictures of the individuals involved. Nikos, I assure you, doesn't look like that at all. Now he's aged badly.
And the hair is longer.
The hair is longer and greyer. I, of course, look just like the picture. But anyway, I'm just joking. But you see on the left-hand side of your screen a set of activities. But the centre is driven by research projects and research connected with organisational forecasting. I make that point to distinguish it from economic forecasting. It's not that we're not interested in economic forecasting, but we are one of possibly even the only specialist group of researchers involved with business and organisational forecasting issues. And what that's meant, and which is relevant here, is we've been continually confronted with the importance of software. And Nikos, and I'm going to leave most of the presentation to Nikos, as you'll probably realise, I've basically lost my voice. So other than saying making the odd interjection, and this is about all I'm going to contribute, but Nikos himself has been developing software. I've been concerned with how people in organisations use software. They use it in very peculiar fashion, and that's what's led to our major interest in this area. So, Nikos, over to you before I go totally hoarse.
Thank you, Robert. So, given the mixed audience we have, I think it's useful to think about who is forecasting in an organization? Who needs essentially these services from the forecasting software? So if we think about the different decisions we have to make in an organization, all of them regard some action in the future, and therefore they need the forecast. They need us to give some information to the decision maker saying this or that scenario is more plausible and so on. And these people will be typically analysts or demand planners in an organization. But obviously this kind of research and the software is primarily relevant also to software suppliers, since they need to understand the needs of the users, but also researchers like us, where we have to think how we can contribute to the current practice and how we can improve further. So if we think about the different aspects that are relevant here, we think about research that is on improving models and methods. We're thinking about how these are applied in practice and how these improve eventually the forecasting process and the accuracy of the forecast and eventually the decisions that one can take in an organizational context and at the bottom line, how much money you can make out of it or save costs. We have to think about how all this actually are placed within the organizational setting. The important thing to understand about business forecasting is that it's not just a bunch of statistical or machine learning algorithms on their own. You have to embed them within the organizational practice. And then we have to think about the setting in which we operate. So this will have to deal with the current structures, the people that they will use these forecasting processes, what is their training, how they develop within the organization, what is their past experience, what software capabilities they have and available software to them as well. And eventually, this interaction is what makes the forecasting software aspect here, because it's not just about having some, let's say, machinery to run some arcane code for producing numbers. It's about how these numbers are actually embedded within the organizational practice. So we have to keep that in mind in terms of the users and the suppliers of the software, and of course the different application areas that these have to serve. You have to think about applications that are software that are trying to be more general in the application setting they can solve. Say, think about an ERP system that, for instance, has to satisfy a multitude of different customers from different sectors, or much more specialized software, for instance, applicable to call center forecasting or energy modeling and so on. So, continuing on this theme, we have to think about what are the issues when someone has to consider the forecasting software question. So first of all, it's a matter of identifying what are the relevant requirements. We have to satisfy a task. The task is to produce accurate forecasts to support some decision. So we need to be able to identify what are the key requirements in getting the decision done. And in that sense, we need to match any software capabilities with that job. So in doing that, we have to think about what are the necessary elements, what are the must-haves, what are elements that it would be nice to have, And eventually, from all these elements, what is available in the market? So where do we get our software, and do our suppliers actually provide us with the current and useful tools that we need? So it's a matter of how do we get the best eventually out of the available and eventually chosen software that we will have to deal with. And in doing so, let's think a bit about how organizations typically do forecasting. And, you know, we have to recognize here that obviously different organizations will have variations on this flowchart, and this provides a very high-level overview. But essentially, once you have defined the problem, once you have a view of what you need to forecast, then it's a question about, well, first and foremost, getting the right data in place, collecting this data and have them accessible for the analyst or the demand planner, thinking about what are the assumptions behind this forecast. For instance, simple things like assuming that the market standing will stay the same or it will change. There are a lot of uncertainties that are often beyond our statistical understanding, and how do we use those in setting the forecast in the organization? We are both located in England right now, so you have questions about Brexit. How do we assume that this will affect our organization when there is no previous evidence? It's an interesting question, and it certainly affects how we're going to do our forecasting. Once we have done these initial steps, we have collected, hopefully, sufficient data to start doing some statistical modeling. If that is the case, that is exactly where the forecasting software starts to be very relevant. Implicitly here, we have already said that we assume that there is the proper data management, that all the data is somehow managed correctly to be available to the right users and the right software as well here. Now, if we were in the case that there is not enough data available, then we're talking about transcendental forecasting, which we'll touch upon a bit later as well, as it is relevant how it interacts with the statistical forecasting and the software per se. But if we stick to the software, there are some key tasks that need to make sure that they are covered. Being able to explore our data, understand what is the problem context. So, for instance, our market is very seasonal or not. We have introduction of new products or not. There is a growth in the market or it's a stable market. This will be results of our exploration of the data. Once we have done that, this can help us to understand what kind of forecasting methods and models are more relevant. So we use some well-established and fairly transparent statistical methods? Are we interested in more causal models or perhaps some machine learning or artificial intelligence? Again, this is an element that we have to decide here, to choose how to choose this correctly. And the forecasting software here plays an important role because it has to provide us with the facilities to do this choice. Once we have essentially sorted the setup, it's a question of eventually running the code, the algorithm, to produce our forecasts. And then the human element starts becoming more important because the number we produce, it will very rarely stay as is for the decision maker. This will go through meetings, different processes where people will superimpose additional information or debate why actually that forecast is as is. They will challenge the assumptions behind the forecast. They will challenge if we have done the right analysis. And through this process, eventually, we will have a revised statistical forecast, which eventually will be set in action. Based on that, we will take our decisions, be that an operational decision such as replenishing our stock or some strategic decision, should we invest in a new market, launch a new product. And in that sense, we have the forecast running. But the forecasting software task doesn't stop there, in the sense that it has to provide us also with a framework to evaluate how good is this forecast. And I use here the vague word good because what makes a forecast good actually is not it's neither straightforward nor set in stone for its different sector or organization. But we'll get to that in a bit more detail. So if we think about the task itself of producing a forecast rather than now the context of producing it, if we go for a very high-level stylized view of it, once we have the data, we have the different techniques and methods we can use to produce this forecast. And it's the task of the expert with support from software to select and estimate, and as you progress iteratively through that, essentially come to the final selection of the forecasting model. On that, you superimpose the market intelligence. And the important thing to keep in mind here is that often this market intelligence is soft information, as we call it. It's information that is quite hard to put into a database. It's let's say, news or rumors you hear from internally in the company or externally from your suppliers or from your customers. So this is data that is very difficult to put in the context of a statistical software. But somehow you need to have the user or the demand planner aware of all this information. You have then issues of, for instance, if we think about inventory setting again, you may have perfect forecast, you may have all the decisions right, but you may be out of stock. And that obviously needs to change the decision that your forecasts are based on. So you have all these kind of, if you wish, post-statistical software elements that will affect and revise the final solution of it. So what do you have there? Then you have, starting from a statistical software, all this additional information that you need to put together to combine them in some sense in order to end up having what is the useful outcome of this process.
Nikos, it's perhaps worth saying a word about text mining as a potential use. I mean, we've not come across it in our supply chain evaluations and research. We did actually do some text mining for one company, but couldn't find it. I couldn't really interpret what they'd done at all, and nor could they. But that was a few years ago. So maybe things have moved on. And in some areas, text mining has some potential. We've done some evaluations, it's early days. We're not convinced, I think, would be my...
We certainly should not neglect the innovation that is happening currently in these areas. So, going to the next slide here, essentially, what we have to do? We have to think about, coming back to the question of the software. We have done the analysis of finding the requirements. We understand a bit what is the software, the forecasting process within the organization we're trying to implement this software. So that should lead naturally to some short listing of the available software. And then we just need to consider essentially, okay, if these are the requirements, how many of the softwares out there can satisfy all these requirements? But also, nowadays we have the question of the open source. So I'm sure many of you have come across all these innovations and libraries and open source software that's available either in R, Python, or other languages. And there is a question how these interact with proprietary software, such as the suite that is offered by SAS or Stata, SPSS, that is now offered by IBM, and so on. There is an open question there, and we will return to that towards the end of the presentation. But surely the question is here, getting the right shortlisting of the available software. Then you will eventually choose the software. So you spend all this time to implement it. You spend all these resources and money to implement it. And you get now your forecast. So what? How can you actually operationalize this and gain value out of it? And that eventually comes into the question of, here is the number coming out of the system. How do I use that number? And there is a lot of elements now that are coming from the process, from the organizational culture itself, rather than from the statistical side of it. So, for instance, we mentioned very briefly before the issue of judgment. How do we actually incorporate this judgment in the software? How do we provide all the relevant information to the user? But also, how do we challenge this forecast? It's perhaps here useful to think about current practice. So there is this survey where multiple forecasting software products have been listed and, in some sense, explained in their key dimensions. And you can see the link there on the slide where people can go and see the details of that. But I think the summary of that is that you can split the available software in a few different categories. So you have, from one hand, the general-purpose statistical programs where it assumes that you have some expertise in the statistics, and then you can apply that to forecasting purposes. Then you have specialist forecasting software that are typically arranged around a particular application. So they may be able to serve questions of supply chain. They may be able to serve questions of marketing. They may be able to serve questions of call centers and so on. And essentially, those have algorithms and methods that are well-designed to solve that problem, together with their interface to help people do the forecast evaluation, as well as the data exploration, that in a general-purpose statistical software, you would have to devise on your own. Then you have much more specialized software, such as the econometric software. IBUS is a typical player in this market, where it assumes that the user has substantial expertise in the econometric modeling and forecasting, it doesn't necessarily think of it as a production system rather than as a research environment where people can explore more advanced forms of forecasting. And then once you have produced this forecast, you have to think about this embedded in the organization, as we said before. So the idea of the forecasting support system becomes relevant here, where in these cases, it's not just about selecting the right methods or visualizing the data, but it's also about how do you record past accuracy, how do you report past accuracy, how do you allow different forms of adjustments to get in the system, perhaps restricting or structuring those, and also being able to report on those, on their performance and so on. We will go, as we proceed with the presentation, in more details on elements of the forecasting support system, because this is quite critical for organizations. Just getting a software to produce a number is just not enough. That then doesn't give you enough structure in the forecasting process to let you get the maximum value of your forecasts. Obviously, assuming that there is enough expertise, then you could always use more mathematical statistical languages such as the open source R or Python or other forms like MATLAB, though I would probably argue that currently MATLAB is not so much in fashion. And on top of all that, obviously, you have the all-encompassing software, Excel, sometimes the most flexible but also one of the bane of forecasting, I would say.
Still probably the most used, I think.
The problem with this software, the same goes, of course, with the mathematical and statistical languages, is that they offer so much flexibility that although it helps you to implement a very bespoke solution, at the same time, it offers you the chance to implement very bespoke mistakes or errors in your forecasts.
Worth describing a bit of that, the project we did, the BSkyB one, where Excel was the dominant feature. And it was just a very, potentially very unreliable process, wasn't it?
That's right. And essentially, that's our important point here, because even when you have well-known techniques or, let's say, metrics to measure your forecasting performance, such as, let's say, the mean absolute percentage error, one of the most popular metrics, you would expect that the implementation of this being a simple formula, it would be straightforward. But our experience from many companies, and the project with BSkyB is an example of that, is that you find mistakes even there. And given the kind of tasks that the forecaster has to do in practice in an organization, they don't necessarily have the time to spend and validate every single formula in a massive Excel spreadsheet. They spend most of the time just maintaining what is already there. So it's quite easy over time for many mistakes to creep in this kind of process that they're not standardized and they rely on this in-house, let's say, implementations or non-specialized software. So from one hand, one would argue this allows me to do what I really need right now in a flexible way, but our experience is actually that typically causes more problems than solving the issue. No matter what, you still need to match the organizational processes, and there is where, in some sense, Excel has become so useful, because it's very flexible and very easy to actually shape it the way you want it, whereas this is not necessarily the case for some of the forecasting software or the more statistical software that is out there in the market. But in doing so, we have to consider what the user expertise. It's one thing to have Robert, for instance, running a forecasting process and understanding the mathematics inside and all their details and all the parameters. It's another thing to have a user who has more experience from the market, from the business, and is not interested in the statistical elements of it or the machine learning elements of it. So we have to understand how this user expertise, of course, in some sense restricts the kind of depth that the software can allow, but also how do we present this information. If everything is a black box or a magic button that produces some numbers, people not only lose trust in it, but more importantly, they may waste additional resources and time in repeating tasks that are already taken care of from the statistics. For instance, consider a case where you have to forecast for a retailer. The retailer will typically have to consider issues about pricing, promotions, special events, and so on. If these elements are already part of the statistical forecast, it would be a shame to spend all your time to re-implement those through judgmental adjustments. So we need some clarity what elements are already incorporated in the statistical forecasts, what assumptions are already in the models that provide these forecasts, what data sources are considered and what are not. Because the idea would be that you would like eventually the users, the experts, to be able to superimpose their expertise and additional information that is not part of the data. Another crucial element, of course, is this idea of, do I want to have an automatic forecasting, or are we talking about an expensive one-off forecast? In many cases, what we really are after are reliable automatic forecasts rather than the most detailed forecast possible. And again, the question of open source against proprietary solutions becomes relevant, not only because they offer different ways of doing that, but because the speed of innovation is quite different here. If we consider who is the typical supplier of open source software, this would be often academic teams. It's quite easy to find online evidence on that. If you just look at surveys of who actually uses open source or who posts on sites like Stack Overflow and so on, you will see that the major users are still academia. But that major is actually about 30 to 40%. The rest is actually from industry. Well, my point I'm trying to make here is that the open source will have a much more aptitude to high innovation, whereas the proprietary software will think about more the process, the automation, and the reliability of the solution. So this essentially, let's say, okay, if this is a state of the art, essentially what are the current issues? And that's a discussion that has to be done in the context of what are the objectives of the forecast as well. So in doing that, we have first to understand the quality of the forecast that is already in place. And in that, the idea of benchmarking becomes quite critical. So you have an organization, you produce your forecast somehow. Clearly, the forecast has some value because you're still on the market. So how do you improve this process? You want to buy new software, you want to know if that software will provide you additional value. Well, the process is quite simple, actually. You need to identify a sample of representative time series. Of course, that wouldn't mean just pick the hardest items you can even ever imagine. Then you have this set of actual recorded sales, if it is sales or whatever is the item of analysis. And then you have the different softwares providing you your statistical forecasts. This may or may not be further adjusted or may take into consideration past adjustments. It's a matter of how you would go about and do this benchmarking. But the idea is that you want to run this kind of competition, and this competition will help you get a feeling of, okay, in theory, that's what I should be expecting to get, but that's what I get actually with my data, with all their complications and all the messiness of the reality. And the question then becomes, what is the value added of choosing a particular way forward for your forecasting software, but also importantly, for allowing all this judgmental information to be taken into consideration? What does each step in the process add in the value? And to our experience, that's an element that is often forgotten. It's very common that people just look at the final forecast and an arbitrary target for accuracy, and they don't consider the different steps in the forecasting process, how much value they add, or perhaps not. So in doing that, there are techniques. If we open any forecasting textbook, you would read things about rolling origin or cross-validation, as is more common in machine learning world. You would read about things, say, how to use techniques that are resilient to outliers. And in some contexts, that's a good trait. In other contexts, it's maybe not a good trait, for instance. So there are aspects there that are coming from the application case. Of course, we need to be able to match to the decision problem. So how long do we need to forecast? Do we forecast just for the next day, as, for instance, a retailer would do in order to fill up the stock? Or are we forecasting for the next quarter, perhaps, or next year for a budget forecast? So all this will require different approaches to how eventually we choose the forecasting thing.
So could I say something about that match? We've done a lot of projects with companies, something like 10, 15 a year for 3 months in the summer. A lot of the problems occur because the software they use doesn't provide
the forecast errors to evaluate them and matching with a decision problem. Maybe there's a frozen period in the supply chain. Maybe they're interested in the cumulative errors over the next month. It never produces it. It's terrible.
Yes. It's the common practice to provide what is easy to calculate rather than what is useful to calculate. So one thing that is surely true is that this is a horses for courses problem, where you have to identify the right approach and the right techniques and interface for your problem. It's not a solution for everything. So in this line, it's useful to think how actually practice does it. So here we have four different surveys that looked at how companies produce forecasts. And we have split the responses into using judgment alone, so without the support of a statistical technique underlying, exclusively using statistics, or then some mixture between statistics and judgment, where either you would have separate forecasts that are somehow combined, or you would have a statistical forecast that is afterwards enhanced with the additional knowledge from the users and experts. And you can see if we go to the average there that although you have still organizations that have purely statistical approaches, in fact, the majority is using some sort of a mix. And that implies a lot for the kind of forecasting software we need to have available, because if this mix is not facilitated, if the experts are not aided in doing the better adjustments they can and also be given feedback for that, then we're losing a lot of value. And I have to be quite clear here that often we don't appreciate how much judgment plays a role. In choosing a particular model family instead of another family, that's a judgmental choice. In going one way or another way in building our models, that's again a judgmental choice. Or even if we go to a bit other areas further from business forecasting, such as weather forecasting, all these massive models contain a lot of parameters that eventually are finally tuned by experts. Nothing is just quantitative modeling. Nothing is just objective modeling. Judgment goes into everything there. And we have to provide the users with the interface and the way to get feedback on how they're improving the forecasting value or how they can help make it better. So, from one hand, what do we have? We have the question of where all this information comes together. So you could have, from one hand, extrapolative models, essentially copy-pasting past patterns such as trend, seasonality, and so on. And the question becomes now, okay, selecting the right parameters, do I have a seasonal model or not, and so on. Exponential smoothing and ARIMA are very common families here on that. From the other line of thought, you have the causal modeling. So now we're trying to build forecasts based on explanatory variables or special events. The price is going to change like that. How will that affect our sales? Competition introduces new product. How this will change our market shares? All these type of questions that try to have a more mechanistic approach to forecasting belong in this causal modeling approach. No matter what the statistical element will be there, again, as we said so many times, the expert information will be superimposed to end up having in the final forecast. Perhaps one thing that is not clear so far is that this expert information is not information coming from a single user. It may be the result of a meeting where you have actors from different parts of the organization. You may have people from the production, from sales, from marketing, from the supply side, where they agree on a forecast that is meaningful for the organization given all the constraints and the information that a particular function may not have. So how does this eventually all pan out? So this result we have here are the results from a case we have worked in the past, where you can see the second bar there, the SAP current, was the current setup of the organization, and that was the error they would have. So the approach that we would follow in this would be take a very standard benchmark, such as a naive forecast. The naive forecast essentially is a random walk. Just assume that the future will be exactly the same as right now. Copy essentially the last value to the future as your forecast. Then you would have other competing forecasting softwares. In this particular case, we have results from Forecast Pro. And we would also consider how we could enhance the existing setup. So within the SAP format they would have there, but thinking about how do we aid the users into selecting better models, better parameters, And often that comes down to actually training the users to appreciate what the software provides. So you get a feeling from how, from an initial setup, just by simply benchmarking against a random walk, you can get the feeling that that setup does not work. If the naive is better than a complex and expensive system, that tells a lot about the implementation and the current value you get out of it. But also, having an alternative software in there, you get a feeling of what's the added value in investing in a different software, or perhaps re-engineering the current process. So this is the whole point of benchmarking, and we can go into more details in that. So we can think, for instance, about, okay, we have the statistical forecast, but then there's this final forecast where judgments have adjusted when needed, the final number. And then we can think about the different sizes of these adjustments, positive adjustments, negative adjustments, depending on the size as well, and we can think how this help or perhaps harm the forecast accuracy. So in this particular case, with our green bars here, we denote the value added from the forecast. That is, how much the statistical forecast error was reduced by allowing this expertise from the users to come into the play. But it's important to underline here, this is not an easy or an automatic process. A key requirement from the forecasting software is to provide, facilitate this interaction. And Robert has spent a lot of years doing research on that area and eventually drawn myself into that. But I think our common understanding is that most forecasting softwares do not pay enough attention on that. And same, of course, is true for fancy solutions coming from open source, where people are more interested in the algorithmical side of things rather than actually how do I make use of the context of the business, of the market I'm operating in. So you get a feeling of the improvements you can get. And in this particular slide, there is a common finding that very small adjustments, for instance, typically do not add any value because this is more like tweaking the numbers rather than actually putting some substantial information. But even that simple finding that has been verified several times in the literature is hard to implement in practice because forecasting softwares do not provide the feedback to the user to suggest, in this particular case, you're not adding value, whereas here you're adding value. So use your resources in different ways. This case we provide from Sanofi Aventis that we worked with them a few years ago, and this slide here provides an overview of the savings eventually. So we are talking about an accuracy improvement of about 35% across the board, and this was mainly done not here by changing software, but using the capabilities of the existing software and training the users how to do it better. And in some sense here, one thing we have to be quite clear. In part of our training, it was also to teach the users how to avoid the limitations of the software, rather than just tell them, okay, this is the better technique or this is the better method. It was more like, given the restrictions you have, this is how you can make your job a bit better. So the implementation eventually was a modified setup with help on how to choose the right algorithms, the right parameters, but critically, as the previous slide suggested, guidance on when they should apply judgment and how they could get the most value out of it. And this was a process that the software there had a lot of failings. We had to devise an external system to help them doing that. So what were the benefits? Well, operationally, you would have fewer adjustments, which meant less time spent on doing those, but also fewer meetings, because people were more aligned in the way they would understand the forecast. They were more transparent why a particular number was, why the final forecast was the number that was given. And that resulted in substantial savings, as you can see. But, you know, for the company also, it was not only the internal cost saving, but it was also a matter of having a better service eventually to your customers, so a better brand name at the end of the day. And we're progressing quite a bit on the presentation, so I think where it gets now interesting to see is what are the dimensions eventually, what are the aspects that are critical to consider in solving that. So if we think about the statistical side of it, we have to think about what are the factors that makes us choose a particular way of producing our forecasts. Okay, so it's a matter of what information we have available, how we can enhance it further or not. For instance, current research looks a lot at using social media for improving your forecast. In principle, this is information that's out there for free. Collecting and making this information in a structured fashion, that is not necessarily for free. That can add a few hurdles for the modeling team. And then there's a question of how much value added there is in that. By the way, there is not a clear answer on that because, again, it depends on the application and the sector. But the point I'm trying to make is that there is information that's available internally, there is available information externally that's easy to get, and information that's available externally that is harder to get. Then it's a matter of the organizational culture. It's all too easy to talk about silos in organizations. How to mitigate the problem, or how to have people exchanging information in a transparent way, or have a common understanding, actually, of what the future will be, is not an easy problem to solve. And I'm not aware of any good solution to it yet. But you can take that one step further, and I think it also, in a supply chain, the collaborative view of the supply chain. How do you interact in terms of exchanging information with your suppliers, or perhaps with retailers that sell your product? Of course, there is the software access, what software is available, and the features you have, what kind of support you get if you want to customize or add new features, and the database, how much data you have in the software. Perhaps that's an interesting point to make here, that a lot of software, for some reason, use a magic number of 3 years of data. I haven't seen any paper suggesting that 3 years is the magic number, but surely I can tell you that if you have to forecast seasonal data, just having seen the annual seasonality 3 times may not be enough.
This is before my time, but three years of, I think, quarterly data was a sort of constraint in the 1950s, and it somehow reflects through to the current decisions made in software design, where such a constraint is obviously easily overcome.
Absolutely right. And we made the discussion about the mixed methods, quantitative methods, and judgment. So the other point I will highlight in this slide is the very last point, the forecast acceptability, which is, it's one thing to get a number that is perhaps great, and there is where AI, for instance, has a lot to say and do, but there is another element of users actually believing that forecast or accepting that this forecast is what they need. Because implementing a very sophisticated system that produces in a very complicated way some forecast, but people have no understanding of that, eventually what you end up having a forecast that is not used, and then users find workaround around it and perhaps produce a simple average in Excel or just plug in a number. SAP, APO, at least their previous forecasting suit, has this not fantastic reputation of being a very expensive typewriter, essentially because of this lack of acceptability of the forecast. So looking at the four software dimensions, what are the requirements we have? How do we handle data? How does it integrate with other programming languages? The different features that we discussed so far, what elements of this are available, what is missing? Newer approaches such as the hierarchical forecasting, are these available there? This could be, for instance, forecasting different items or segments or, let's say, the total of the organization, and having all this forecast being reconciled, they provide a common view of the future. All this discussion we had about judgment, forecasting, and adjustments, how do they allow you to explore your data? And we can both create these lists for several slides, but the point is, at least having the capability of providing some exploration of the data, what methods they provide you, are they general methods, are they bespoke to the sector you're operating? And that leads us, of course, to the good question of, so we use open source, what's the value of open source? I don't want to stay too much time on that, but I think it's important to underline that open source is not free, in the sense that open source typically does not provide the interface or the data infrastructure to make use of it. It's typically some mixture of some proprietary software and open source that makes a good solution. But that's the important point here, that proprietary software should allow this pairing together, and more software houses are aware of this and they're offering these capabilities, but also open source implementations should be developed in this fashion, that they would be a component of a production system rather than a single algorithm to support the whole forecasting. I mentioned then open source ethics, and that's something perhaps for organizations to consider a bit more. The only way that research can be happening and be relevant to industry is industry talks to academia and researchers. We need to have transparency of the problems and access to data. Otherwise, there is no way to solve the problems we don't know. There are questions about implementation scalability. We have developed a lot of different packages here at the Forecasting Center at Lancaster. We hope that the implementation is of high enough quality, but surely this is something that we cannot guarantee for every single open source line of code that is out there. But one thing that is certainly clear is that universities trying to be in the forefront of innovation will often make sure that these packages are state-of-the-art. So the other aspect, of course, is that it's one thing to have a software, another thing is to have forecast as a service. Nowadays, you can actually go online and see how can you can outsource your forecasting process itself. For instance, Amazon offers this kind of service, or if you follow LinkedIn discussions, you will hear a lot about Facebook profit and so on. There are some questions there again to ask. How much transparency you get on the forecast? How do you know what's happening? How are these numbers generated? What factors are accounted for? What are the assumptions behind it? And how do you integrate this with the in-house expertise and all this soft information you may have? Eventually, no matter which direction you take, there is the question of how expensive is producing your forecasts. So, in trying to identify what is the right software, again, it's a matter of what is absolutely necessary to have given the requirements of the organization, what would be nice to have considering future growth, the requirements, the technical requirements that we need to have here. For instance, a large retailer may need to produce several millions of forecasts daily. Can this be offered by a particular software? Is it fast enough? Or how much computational power we need to do that? If we think about the implementation itself, is it done correctly? Are the methods valid? Does it offer all this benchmarking and comparative accuracy that we would like to see? And is there evidence of it?
I mean, it's quite shocking that after all these years, some of the basic methods, such as exponential smoothing, are not programmed with any validity in some of the core packages.
And these are single-line equations. They're not very complicated equations. I mean, mind you, there are questions about how you set up parameters and so on, but it's not the most complex task. So here, for example, in our center, we have a list of different forecasting packages. And this slide is not here in order to advertise the work we're doing, but it's also to show the gap of forecasting softwares. So, for instance, here we have a package on intermittent demand forecasting. There isn't much in the market that actually does intermittent demand in a state-of-the-art fashion. And in fact, a few software houses are using our package in order to provide their forecast. Or, for instance, things that take into consideration neural networks in a business forecasting point of view, or diffusion models and so on. Okay, so as a final point, it's important to match the organizational processes. It's important to take into consideration what data is available or how do you help the organization develop their data maturity. The people who are going to be interacting with the forecast in terms of producing the forecast but also using the forecast, what are the requirements? What decisions are being supported by this forecast? We need to be very clear about the specifications there. Without that, we essentially have just a general solution that will not serve the purpose. The quality of the software that's available is not set in stone. It varies in the sense that implementation sometimes, as Robert just mentioned, can be quite dubious. But often, sometimes, it's not about having a bad implementation, but it's about not allowing you to do the right tuning of parameters or enough transparency in how these things are done. So again, detracting from the trust that users have on the software. And surely the point that most software currently, proprietary or open source, are missing a lot is how you have this this facilitation of having this managerial intervention for the forecasting. We know it adds value. We know it can be inconsistent. But we don't know if it's inconsistent because of inherent weaknesses or because the software structure we have does not help it. So it all goes down to eventually delivering a good final forecast rather than just the statistics, just the judgment, or any specific element on its own. It's forecast within an organization for the purposes of the organization. And I think with that, we're up for your questions now. Thank you.
All right, okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Let's see. So maybe does anybody have a question out there who's listening through the phone system? Anybody from industry?
Yes.
Hi,
this is Sumit Desai from Praxair, Lindy now.
Yeah.
Just had some question on how would you go around conducting benchmarking exercises? So when we're trying to focus things on a customer level and customers consuming, let's assume, the same product, but we are having an existing forecasting method and we want to kind of find a new way to forecast and find out if it is performing better or not. Now, one way to do that is obviously we could measure the delta of actuals versus forecasted over a period of time and understand which method is performing better. Now, this can be different for each customer. So would you count like the number of better forecasts produced, or would you just go for an accurate overall better MAE or a method that produces accurate forecast?
There is a... I don't know how much you have followed the forecasting competitions. Currently, there is a discussion about the latest M4 forecasting competition. The approach it took was, let's say, have several hundreds of thousands of time series, apply forecasting techniques or methodologies, get a ranking out of this, and essentially do a horse race and say this one was the best one. This can be somewhat crude approach. In what sense? We made the point before that there is horses for courses. You will have different cases where a particular algorithm or method will be very successful, and other cases will be quite unsuccessful because it just doesn't have, the data don't have the right characteristics. So for the way that we would look at it, it would be always, of course, have some simple benchmark to make sure that something more complicated is needed. But then the benchmarking should be done for the particular case. It's not an overall better. I don't know if that helps in answering the
question. Can I just add... You also raised the question of how you evaluate, and that really does depend on whether the average across customers is what's relevant to you, or whether you're trying to pick off individual customers, in which case percentage of customers with improvement is the measure. So you've got to match your evaluation criteria to your KPI. I think that's an important aspect. And a final point, if you can hear me through my hoarse voice, a final point is that benchmarking across organizations doesn't work for the reasons Nikos has referred to it, because it is horses for courses. You've got to look at a particular set of data that's relevant to you.
All right. Thank you very much. So any other questions? Yeah. I'm sorry,
this is Wen Chung, also from Praxair. I'm just curious, you mentioned that judgmental adjustments have the potential of increasing accuracy. Do you have any insight on how we can detect the opportunities for applying judgmental adjustments?
Well, are we talking about a case where judgmental adjustments have been already running for a while? In that case, it would be more about decomposing the accuracy gains. So you would have a measurement of the accuracy only using the statistical forecast against the accuracy of the final adjusted forecast. If we don't have a case where judgmental adjustments have already been running, I mean, the usual understanding is that judgment will always offer something. But of course, there's something here needs a disclaimer that, you know, depends what information is available. So the guiding principle for me would be, what additional information would the experts be able to add on top of the statistical forecast? If we're talking about the baseline simple forecast that does not capture a lot of the important elements of the market, then surely you would expect judgment to offer a lot. If you have a sophisticated forecast that captures all the information available, and that's a utopic case that will never be completely correct, at least not with the forecasting techniques we have right now, then you would expect Jasmine to have very limited effect. But in reality, you're always somewhere in the middle. So that leaves enough space for human experts to always add value, given that they're provided the information. So it becomes a question of interface now.
Thank you.
Any other questions out there? What about here in the audience? Any questions? Yeah. Can you speak up? Yeah.
So you talked a lot about...
Come here. Yeah. And quickly, please, because we have only 2 minutes, okay?
So you talked a lot about how these forecasting methods integrate judgment and that... So what kind of methods do the current state-of-the-art use to integrate these into the forecasting methods themselves? Are there, like, constraints? Do they fit a forecast and they say, oh, this doesn't work, so let me tweak it a little bit after the fact? Is there some kind of, like, complete solution to this?
Given that Robert has done most of the research in the area, I will force him to answer that.
Okay, thanks, Nick. No, there is very limited software support for judgment. And this goes to the database. I mean, judgment in a supply chain is often introduced through an S&OP process, a sales and operations planning process, which can be quite complicated. So you've got a statistical forecast. You then have that's put into the S&OP process, which then leads to a modified forecast. Now, that statistical forecast may include causal factors like promotions variables or holidays. You know, holidays may be part of the statistical forecast, but may not be. So you've got a potentially complex causal model, but even then, and we've got a case study on this at present, even then, it's possibly necessary to modify with judgment the statistical forecast. So in an organizational setting, you've got to look at the processes, see where judgment is being used, see where potentially it could be used. And as Nicholas says, what's important is that the key features of the data, the causal drivers in your market, are available to the people doing a judgmental adjustment to the managers.
Just to add a very quick note, that there are several studies that have shown that just taking a simple combination, a simple averaging of a pure statistical forecast and an adjusted forecast will typically add value. That in itself says that, you know, it's not about, okay, so a simple average is the best way forward, but it just shows the potential of doing this in better ways. And we just don't have the better ways yet in the literature or in practice.
We should add that this area of judgmental adjustment of forecast has been very little researched, and the use of software or the design of software is almost zero research in the area, and yet big software companies like SAS have identified it as a priority. It's a curious mismatch. I think it's because forecasting is often seen as time series analysis. Well, it's not. It's much more than that. It's about processes, data, statistics, econometrics, the whole mix. It's a nice, exciting mix, I would say.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Maybe one last very quick question. Since our group here is developing mostly optimization models, and since you have mentioned the issue of software, can you comment just very briefly how easy or how difficult is it to integrate some of these systems into modeling, optimization modeling systems? I'm thinking systems like AMS, AIMS, Pioma, something of that sort? Or how much work does it require to integrate them? If I want to have an optimization model and I say, well, have the software available, what does it take to integrate them? Do you have any idea of that?
This is a quite interesting one, because the way at least we see it, optimization comes before and after forecasting. Right. We need very interesting optimization techniques in order to be able to parameterize our models from one hand. So, you know, often we are constrained in not having the right optimization there, But once we have a forecast, that forecast typically will be a probabilistic forecast. It won't be a single value. It won't be just 100. It will be 100 plus something. So it will be a distribution around it. And often when we think about optimization, how we take that distribution and carry it forward is a good question. So do we discretize it somehow? There is not enough research in showing how to discretize it. There are good papers around it, and we have seen some good evidence in practice. But surely, if we can draw parallels to the judgment, it's an area that could worth much more exploration.
Right.
Well, I did some PhD students a few years ago. We did some interesting research in call center planning and scheduling, where we looked at an integrated system of forecasting and optimization. And what came out clearly is that you should look at both sides of this together. Actually analyzing them separately was a very bad idea. And, of course, all the commercial software, and probably almost all practice as well, analyzes them separately.
Right, right. Okay, well, thank you very much on that tone. I would really like to thank again Professor Robert Files and Nicolaos Kourentzis for, you know, very interesting, very comprehensive overview. And also wanted to remind you about their excellent article in ORMS if you want to learn some more about, you know, software for forecasting. So thank you very much, Robert and Nick. I really appreciate very much your presentation.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, we have to run.
Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye, everybody. Bye.